Dodge City, Kansas.
Dodge City, Kansas.
In 1915.
And you came from Kansas?
I came out from Kansas in August of 1923.
Uh-huh.
We got here the last day of August. My mother and father and five brothers and sisters in a Model T Ford.
And you were going where when you
came here? My dad was headed for Roseburg.
Uh-huh.
But when he hit Le Grand, he was broke, and that's where we ended up.
And he was electrician by trade?
Yeah. And the first place I lived here in Le Grand was, there was a big two-story house right down here where the College Coliseum is.
Uh-huh.
I lived there in that house. We got here the last day of August and had to go to school about 2 days later.
And what school did you go to?
I went to Central.
Central
School. And I can't remember the, some of my teachers' names was Nell Mahaffey.
Uh-huh.
And Mrs. Gower, Mrs. Snyder, they were in high school.
Uh-huh.
And
what grade were you in, Bill, when you...
Third
grade.
I think the teacher's name was Mrs. McNeese.
Uh-huh.
When I was in the third grade. And I went through Central School and then into high school, but I didn't finish high school.
Uh-huh. Well, how was it when you came from Dodge City to Le Grand? Did you feel comfortable?
Well, it was quite a change because of the mountains. I'd never seen a mountain until we come out of Kansas into Colorado, and we saw the Rocky Mountains there, and I thought there's no way we're going to go over the top of those mountains, but we did. And we came up through Wyoming and then into Le Grand.
Uh-huh.
And but the difference here was the mountains. We didn't have any in Kansas, it's all flat back there, prairies.
And your dad went right to work as electrician?
Yeah, he went right to work about the second day he was here. Went to work for an electric shop that was located right across the street from M.J. Goss's, where M.J. Goss is now. There was a fella had that shop, was named Harry Williams.
Uh-huh.
And dad worked for him for a few years, and then dad bought him out and bought the shop out himself.
Uh-huh.
And then the Depression come along, and that put the end to everything.
A lot of people suffered during that time.
Yeah.
While you were going to school, was there anything significant happened?
Not really, other than just meeting new kids and stuff, you know. But we had, we later lived up on Cedar Street, Cedar and K, and this teacher, Nell Mahaffey, lived in a house behind us, but there was a big field out there, and then Deals lived up on the Sunset Drive, where Sunset Drive is, and that was just a big field. And Nell Mahaffey lived in a house in the center of that field. And she had a niece that lived with her, June Deal. And she used to come by and holler at me to get ready to get to school. And I didn't like that because teacher lived too close to me. She put me on her lap one day, and I was messing around doing something. She put me on her lap and says, "I'm going to dust your britches for you." Things like that. But other than that, just...
And you did the normal things kids do growing up.
Yeah. Got into all kinds of problems and trouble.
You hunted and fished.
Yeah, we used to go up to Morgan Lake, you know, up there and fish and walk up there and fish all day and then walk back with a whole tub full of perch. And Dad, he'd say, "You don't go back up there and do that again." He didn't want no more of them fish. Then we just had, well, in those days when we were kids and the Depression come along, you didn't have anything. So we had to make up our own stuff. We sleigh ride in the winter, and we'd go up here at Slaughter Pond and ice skate in the winter time, and then you just swim in the river.
Down what they call high banks?
Yeah, down around high banks, and the dump was right on the river down there.
That was above high banks.
Yeah, there. And we swam right below in the river. I don't know how we ever kept from getting typhoid fever and everything else. And then we had another one down at the river, down to the park, under the
Riverside
bridge.
Park.
Yeah, Riverside Park. We swam down there. That's where I learned to swim. My brother threw me in and said, start swimming.
Well, when did you start learning to be an electrician?
My dad had a shop here. He came back. They moved to Portland in 39. He worked for the highway department when they built the highway shops, the old highway shops. He went to work in there. He wired the building as an electrician. Then when they got done, there was no work, so he went to work for the highway shop. And he worked there for about 10, 12 years, and then he got transferred to Portland. And he went to work on the interstate bridge as an electrician down there. And then in around 45, he moved back here and started another shop. And he had a shop in there just behind Zimmerman's on First Street, across the alley from Zimmerman's.
Where Doyle Zimmerman started the first
first store there. Uh-huh. And I went to work for him there, but just as a helper. And I worked for him, and then...
Was that an apprenticeship type?
It was. I just went in as a helper, and I worked for him for a couple of years, and then he moved back to Portland. Times got tough again, and he went back to Portland, and after that, let's see, before that, I worked for Frank Clevenger in the moving and storage.
Yeah. And we're calling you. Storages now.
Yeah, and worked with Chess Turnbull. Uh-huh. Him and I worked together. He drove one truck and I drove the other truck. I worked for Frank for 3-4 years, and then I went to work for my dad after that. Well, after Frank sold out to Effling, and I worked for Mr. Effling and Golden Effling. They had that for a while. Then when they got out there, I went to work after my dad left in 45, I went to work for Doyle Zimmerman.
Oh.
And I worked for Doyle for a couple of years, and I worked with Eddie Hudson. We laid rugs and linoleum and tile and worked on appliances in the store. I worked for him, and then after that, I went to work for Buckley. Mm-hmm. Buckley Electric.
Yeah, I remember down
on Depot. Yeah, I worked there. And then after Buckley sold out, Jim Maldonado's father-in-law opened a shop here on the corner of Adams and Depot.
Yeah.
Across from Rexford Drug.
Yeah.
And I went to work for him for a few years.
Now to get to work as an electrician, had you had to take tests?
I took my test for electrical, for the electrician journeyman's test.
Uh-huh.
I took that from a fellow that was electrician in Le Grand, Roy Ramsey.
Yes.
After he got over the... out of electrical work, he went into the electrical inspector, and I took an examination from him in 1950, and Bob Munhall and I took our exams together down Roy's basement one night, and passed the test. And then right after that, I went to work for electrical construction out of Boise, and wired the library at the college.
Uh-huh.
When they built it, another fellow.
That was Walter remember. Pearsley.
Yeah, I can't. But I had my journeyman card then. And after I got done there, let's see, where'd I go then? Oh, I went to work for Bill Bonicamp. I worked for him for a couple of years. And then I worked for different contractors out of Portland, and I worked for, done some work, a lot of work over at the college for a contractor, Watco Electric out of Portland, and Evergreen Electric Evergreen Electric in Portland, and I worked for the electrical construction out of Portland down at Lime. I was down there for about a year rebuilding and rewiring that.
You and Mitch Aislinn.
Yeah, Miss Aislinn and I, we worked together quite a bit. And then we went over to Hanford, Mitch and I. We were over there a while when they were on the nuclear plant over there. And I came back here, and that's when I went to work for Bonicamp, I think. I worked for Bonicamp, and then after I got done at Bonicamp, I got slack, and I went to work at the college.
Uh-huh. Well, when you first went to work as an electrician, where they had they phased out knob and tube?
Yeah, that was pretty well gone then. There was, you got into a lot of knob and tube wiring from the old houses, uh-huh. But it was all phased out. It was all Romex cable. Uh-huh. Yeah, they done away with that.
Did they have grounds at that time, or the three-wire, wires from ground, did that come?
Yeah, that come after I went into it.
Uh-huh.
You had 220, 110, 440, and all that,
uh-huh.
All three-wire, and then they have the three-wire three-phase, and four-wire, three-phase, and different, all kinds of that stuff. And then when Mitch and I came back from Hanford, Mr. Buckley called us. He got a contract at the Central School. When they built the Central School, he got a contract to wire that. And he called us over from Hanford and said, if you guys will come back and wire the school, I've got all the material. And all you guys, here's the blueprints, go up there, I'll leave you alone. So Mitch and I wired Central School.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to work at the college as an electrician and later on as a maintenance foreman.
Uh-huh.
I retired there in 77, July 77.
It,
That was about 58 or 57 you went over there.
At the college, I went to college in May 1959.
59.
Till 77.
What year did you move here on G Avenue?
On G, 57 wasn't it?
That,
yeah.
Yeah, that was
August of 57 we moved here on G.
Yeah. As our next door neighbors.
Uh-huh.
As our next door neighbors.
Yeah.
you told me a little story about when you were going to school that Eldridge Huffman had said you with Mary. What grade was that?
That was the freshman year in college, in high school, wasn't it?
No, that was my senior year.
No, I wasn't in high school in your senior year.
Okay, yeah, I
thought it was our freshman year. When he made me sit with you, sit with me, or
yeah.
Me sit with you.
You sat with me.
I know when you'd come into Eldridge Huffman's room in the morning or to go to class, the first thing he'd say, put that gum in the waste paper basket, whether you had any gum or not.
Well, it must have worked. You got married in what year?
1935.
1935.
Mary graduated in 34. Got married the next year, in September of 1935.
Well,
we've been married almost 67 years.
That's a dear.
Yeah. We got married and Mary was working for a Greek fella that had a candy store downtown there by the Arcade Theater, the Liberty Theater. She was working there, and I went up and pitched bundles, hauled bundles to the thrash machines up at in Ladd Canyon at Stockoff's place.
Oh.
I worked up there for 2 weeks and made $20. Came back to town. We got married. That's all we had was $20.
You once told me a story that you and Mary met Dallas McKinnon on the street, and he says, "I'm going to Hollywood to be a movie star."
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
He was a nephew of Mrs. Burnett. Or Bernie's.
Mrs. Bernie.
Bernie's, yeah. Mm-hmm. Bernie.
Mr. George Bernie.
Yeah. He was dressed up. He looked real nice. He was dressed up. He said, "My little belly and man, you gotta tell me something." So, of course, we stopped and listened. And he said, "My aunt said I could go to Hollywood. And I'm going."
Yeah, doing it all.
And so we both wished him luck and wished him all the good things. And you know, it turned out pretty good.
Yes, he became Cincinnati's on Daniel Boone.
Yeah.
And other movies.
Yeah, he was in school with us here.
And, yeah. Well, you knew a celebrity.
Yeah, right.
It, all these years you went out and you hunted and fished?
Yeah. Ever since I can remember, I started hunting elk, I think, in about 1937, right after I got married.
Uh-huh.
And I hunted them every year since. And fishing and stuff. Used to go down the Snake River quite a bit, up the Phillips quite a bit fishing.
What's the biggest changes locally that you can think of?
I think the college is one of the big changes that was made, because that over there where the college was built, that's where I used to play all the time, in that field. And when they built the college, where that...
How big was the cemetery over the college that they had to take out when they started building?
It was mostly up on that top of the hill up there. It wasn't as big as it is over here now, you know, of course, but... There was quite a few old holes left up there where they dug out the graves and moved them. And when they were building the first building at the college, the administration building, they dug up a lot of bones up there.
Do you remember any particular thing that why they picked that spot for the college, and what was being said around town?
I don't know why they picked that certain spot, but I know LeGrand and Pendleton was both after that college. And LeGrand somehow, I don't know why, they won out on it. They built it up there on that hill. But
well, it's possibly because of Walter Pierce being governor at the time.
Could have been, yeah. And then where 8th Street is there, where the hill is, that was just a big gravel pit in there. There was no street there. And I remember we lived down on G Avenue, had a big red barn there. And they dug the basement up there with teams and Fresnos, you know, and they'd blast and then they kept the horses down there in our barn at night.
Oh.
And those kids would always make it up there about 6 o'clock in the evening to get off work to ride those horses back down. We'd water them in the creek there by Wynn's place.
This was in 1929.
Yeah. And then they keep the horses in our barn.
Uh-huh.
We got to ride those horses all the time.
Well, in those old days, there was quite an expanse between Old Town and New Town by the railroad.
Yeah.
Where there weren't any houses. A lot of vacant lots.
Yeah. Especially on 4th Street here, there was hardly any, you know, going down 4th Street here between here and the school. There were just a few houses along in there. And then the you had the Sacred Heart Academy down there, where the hospital is now.
Where they built the St. Joseph Hospital later.
Where it is now. You had that, but there wasn't too many houses, and then over here toward the college there weren't too many houses, just one or two houses over in there. There was a few there on J Avenue, right where the library is in there now. There was a few houses in there. But the rest of that out there was just a big flat where they used to, circus used to come up there and they'd pitch the tents up there on that flat. The Algae Barn Circus come in every year.
You told me they used to march the elephants up 4th Street.
Yeah.
And then turn on K and go over on that hill before the college.
Yeah, they used to stop there on K and 4th, and they'd get the fire hose out and they'd water them, wash them elephants down and water them and get them all cooled down, and then they'd go over, and then they used the elephants to put the tents up. Us kids always went over there, and we always went down and met the train. They always come in on a train. Met the train too way early in the morning, and then we'd stick with them all day and go up, and they'd let us help put up the tents and stuff, put in the bleachers, and then we'd get a free ticket to the circus.
Yeah, it was a good project.
And then if we stayed and helped tear down, then we got all the soda pop and lemonade and stuff, not soda pop, they had lemonade and stuff like that. We got all that, all the goodies after they tore down. So we'd put in a long day.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. Used to have a lot of fun out there. We always look forward to that circus coming to town. Oh, I don't know, it's changed a lot, you know, with the college coming in and then the railroad going out. That's a pretty good change. And
you'd say most everybody in town that had relatives that worked for the railroad.
Most everybody did. Most of the people that lived here worked for the railroad.
The roundhouse
and
the yard
crew. After the mill came in, Mount Emily Mill,
that was
a lot of people worked for the mill, but they did have a mill down where the fairgrounds is, Bowman Hicks.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys worked there, and they had another mill at Perry.
That was a Stoddard.
Yeah.
I think
that was Palmer Lumber, I'm not sure.
Well, Palmer was before Bowman Hicks.
Yeah. Down to Bowman Hicks.
Yeah. Down by the fairgrounds.
Yeah. They had those, and then... The railroad was the most biggest industries around, you know. And then the college come in and some of these other outfits, and Mount Emily's built up to Boise Cascade and made a big outfit.
Well, when you were kids, what were the theaters that you had?
Theaters? There was next to Zimmerman's, the building there was called the Carr Building on the corner of Adams and Fur. And next to it was the Star Theater. It was a wood building. And then up the street there they had the Arcade Theater next to where the City Hall is now, and it was later the Liberty. And then right down the street, about three or four doors, was another theater called Sherry's Theater, and then it was later called the State Theater.
Yeah,
and they had those three shows here.
Well, what about was the Rex Theater up above what was last called the Phoenix Building? Was that
I don't remember Rex Theater.
Maybe that was a little before your time.
Could have been, yeah. I don't remember that one. The Star Theater.
Where the Red Cross, Payless Drug was later.
Yeah.
Rex had been upstairs there.
Yeah, I don't remember. What was up there that I remember was below was a clothing store on the down floor, and on the upstairs was the armory.
Uh-huh.
They had an armory up there, National Guard Armory.
Is that where they had the skate rink
Yeah, there was a skating rink up there too.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, where the armory was, it was a skating rink before it was an armory.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should go down there skating, roller skating.
Didn't you ever go down to Zuber Hall today?
Yeah, down to Zuber Hall, but we mostly, us kids, we mostly went to the Eagles.
Oh.
They were next to the Elks Lodge, right next door.
In Honan Hall.
Yeah, and Honan Hall was over there, and but we mostly went to the Eagles because it was a cheaper dance. We'd get in for a dime, if you, or sneak in. And they played mostly old-time music up at the Eagles more than they played more modern music down at Zuber Hall. But, used to go down there and you could go in the balcony for free.
Oh.
A fellow that was a janitor at Central School, Mr. Lilly.
Uh-huh. Zach Lilly.
He took tickets down there all at the dance there on Saturday nights. He knew every kid in town. And if you real happened to be real pretty good in with him, he'd slip you in the door or so. But usually you could go upstairs and for nothing. Well, a lot of guys would go upstairs there, and then when they'd have a moonlight waltz or something, they'd turn the lights down, would all peel over the edge of the balcony and drop down on the dance floor. The balconies would be empty when they turned the lights back on. We used to go to the show that way at the Arcade Theater. When they had the high school would have their homecoming games, you know, they'd have a big rally, and they'd have a big bonfire, and they'd burn a big, you know, like they do with the bonfire. And then after that, they'd all get into a line, a serpentine line, a little more or less, and they'd go downtown, all the high school kids, and they'd be arm in arm. And they'd go in the evenings, they'd go into whatever stores was open, in through the stores and through the pool halls, and then they'd go up and go through the theater. Well, us kids would get on the tail end of that, and when they went through the theater, we'd drop off in there. And the front seats would all fill up in the theater all of a sudden. They'd go through all the theaters, and that's the way we got in the show quite a bit. And of course, the show in them days was what? Dime, 10 cents? But nobody had a dime very much. I remember that. That was a great deal when they had that homecoming deal.
Was there any thing that you'd rather have been than an electrician?
That I would rather have been?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I always thought I'd like to work for the Forest Service.
Oh.
Of course, in those days, they didn't have much of a Forest Service, but later on, I always thought, I'd like to went to work for the Forest Service.
Because you love the mountains.
Yeah, I'd love to be out in the mountains, you know. And I never did really like electrical work.
Now, is that right?
That's odd, because I was in it for years, 30 years, I guess, but I never really liked it.
That was your way of making a living.
Yeah. But I got stuck with it and I had to stay with it. But I didn't really enjoy, enjoy doing that kind of work for some reason. I don't know.
The name Paul, his nephew admired him because he was an electrician. Michael became an electrician.
Yeah, but then Michael, he became aware. He got his, I got him into it.
He's got two boys.
And then he's got two boys, and one of them's electrician, and the other is studying.
Well, they often fall on families.
Yeah, and then my brother was electrician, my older brother.
When you were a kid, how old were you when you cut your thumb off?
I was 17.
17?
About 17 years old.
Uh-huh.
That was a kind of an odd deal because we had, well, I lived up on the, in the 2nd Street, right at the bottom of the hill. On 2nd Street, we had a big old tree out there and decided, brother and I decided to cut it down. We cut that tree down. And then I went around in the back of the house. We had a chop block out there, and I started to split some of the wood, and then boy, I whacked my, cut my thumb off. Come down, you know, and off it went. And I run in the house, hollered at Mom, I cut my hand off, and I run out the front door. I don't know where I was headed, but I'd getting out of there and run up the street, and Donnie Matott lived up on the corner up there. A fellow named Donnie Matott, and he saw me, and he come down and tackled me and put a deal on my arm, and they got a hold of Dr. Horn, and Dr. Horn come up and hauled me to the hospital, and that, and about a week later, my sister, she was real short, hooked on the hook in the locker and pulled her ring finger off. That happened about a week after I chopped my finger thumb off.
Oh,
and Dad was about ready to clean the house.
That's, well, that saved you from going to the service in World War II.
Yeah, they sent me down there. I went, the way I got into that was I went to the shipyards, worked in the shipyards.
Uh-huh.
And we had this, I worked for Willamette Iron and Steel, and we were working on British mine layers. And but you'd go to work in the morning, they'd say, well, we haven't got any equipment, you'll have to just go over to the ship and wander around, act like you're doing something. Well, that went on for about 6 weeks. Every morning you didn't have nothing to do, stand around and try to act like you're doing something all day long, you know, for 6 weeks. Finally, I went over to the boss one morning, and I told him, I said, I'm quitting. Getting out of here. He says, you can't quit. He says, you're frozen here. During the war, they froze you. And I says, you don't see no icicles hanging on me. I'm leaving. I says, I'm getting too lazy. I don't even want to wash my fans and face when I go home at night. So he says, well, if you quit, I'll turn you into the draft board. So I quit and come back home, and about 2 weeks later I got a notice from the president, report, down to Portland. So a bunch of us hauled us down to Portland, and I went through the examination down there, okay, like come out, and the guy looked at it, and he says, you don't have a thumb on your right, on your left hand. He says, if you had a stub there, we'd take you, but we can't take you. And he says, I'm sorry. And I thought, you're sorry, I ain't.
One of the guys that went with that group, Doyle.
Oh, yeah, Doyle was down there with us on that, and Charlie Cater.
Yes.
He was in on the train with us.
Well, West Hall must have been with you too.
West could have been there, probably.
Yeah, because he said he went down there when Charlie Cater.
Well, I was on the island with Charlie Cater.
Uh huh.
Yeah, but in, I don't know, about 19. I can't remember what year it was. I joined the National Guard.
Uh-huh.
I was in the Guards for about 3 years. And we used to go down to Camp Klatz up in the summertime for our 2 weeks training.
Uh-huh.
Down by Seaside. And I remember one time we were going down on the train and I lost my hat. And I got latrine duty for that. I'll have my hat. But then there was, a guy named, I remember one of the, Captain Bean.
Yeah.
Was the captain, and then Jesse Andrews was a lieutenant.
Uh-huh.
And I remember a guy called Duke Oliver was a sergeant. I remember those guys, and I remember Howard Peterson, some of the guys who was in there with me.
What year was that?
I think it was around 1930 somewhere in there, 31 or 32. But us kids used to, we didn't have nothing to do in those days. You didn't have any money, so we'd go hiking up on the hill, you know, and there was a place up here above Slaughter Pond on the South Hills here. They had a big old wooden building sitting up there. It wasn't a big building, just they called it the Pest House. And that's where they would take people and that had a communicable disease, they would put them in there, that, you know, to isolate them. They put them in the Pest House.
From the community.
Yeah. And that old place was empty, and us kids used to go up there and play cowboy and the Indians with it. And I remember one time we were, a bunch of us, we got up in the attic, and the other bunch of that was supposed to be the, I guess we were the Indians, I don't know, and they were the cowboys. They started shooting 22s up through the attic at us, and I don't know how we didn't get somebody to get shot at, you know, with those 22s or lives of ammunition. It was crazy kids. So we were coming down from there one time, and there was a kid that was running around. His name was Athol Oliver. And it was my brother had come home from the Navy, and he brought a buddy with him. And they were with us. So my brother's buddy told Athol, he says, well, hold up that 22 box, and I'll shoot it out of your hand. So Athol, he holds up this 22 box, and Gil was the guy's name. Gil, he shot it out, and he shot his thumb off.
Oh, boy.
And we used to play with live ammunition like that, and I don't know how we ever survived. But I was with a fellow, that kid that I run around with, Glenn Ford. Not Glenn Ford, Walter Ford. Yeah. And we were up at the high school field. We played hooky that day. We didn't go to school that day, but we played hooky. We was walking across the field, and a kid named Mike Dupin had a pistol, 22 pistol. And he cut the lead off with the, even with the brass, and left a little lead in there. And he thought he was shooting blanks. He thought, well, this is just a blank. And we were walking across the field, Walter and I bent down to pick up something, a rock or something. And about that time I heard a snap, and Walter grabbed his neck. Well, what happened, Mike Dupin had shot that 22, which he thought was a blank shell, at us, and when I bent down, it missed me and hit Walter in the neck. And, of course, it hauled him off to the hospital. And then, from then on, he never did. He was paralyzed on the left side. Drug his foot and his arm. He couldn't use his arm. But if I hadn't bent down, it would probably hit me.
Got you.
Yeah. But we've done some crazy things, like all kids, I guess. Yeah. Then there was a. Of course, we lived in Old Town, and we had the Old Town gang, and you had the North Side gang. The railroad tracks was a borderline.
It was a division point.
Yeah, you go across that line, you're going to get in trouble. But the odd part of it was, most of the kids that lived in Old Town went with the girls that lived on the North Side, and the North Side guys went with girls that lived on the South Side. But we had a lot of fun. We'd get up there in the wintertime on that Second Street Hill, and everybody'd get out there at night and sleigh ride up and down that hill, you know. old Jess Turnbull, he built a great big toboggan, and we all rode on that toboggan, and we'd build a big bonfire up there and have a heck of a time.
And you talked about Jess Turnbull when you both worked for Clevenger. Wasn't he supposed to be the strongest man in town?
Boy, he was.
He could move a piano almost by himself.
I've seen him take a strap and go around the piano and get it up on his back and walk off with the piano on his back. He was a strong man. He was a strong, long man. Yeah, and a real nice guy. Always wore that big old cowboy hat. He was a really, really nice guy. He had a brother named Dale. He worked for Clevenger too before I went to work there. They both drove trucks, and they kept the trucks up here where Frank Clevenger lived up here on 3rd Street. They kept the trucks in the barn over there on 2nd Street. I worked with him, and Mary and I bought a little house over on 1st and I Avenue. We was living over there when I worked for Frank Clevenger. In fact, I got a picture somewhere around here of me with my truck called Go Anywhere Truck, was what it was called.
And interesting time.
Yeah.
Our first house didn't have water, light.
Oh yeah, when we first got married.
Two little empty rooms.
Yeah. We lived in that little house up there on Cedar there, just off of B. Still there then, but they built onto it since we lived in it. We rented that when we first got married for $1.25 a month. The water was out in the yard, and the two-hole were out back, and and we didn't have nothing. We had a hard time paying the $1.25. And then we had kerosene lights. We didn't have no electricity. Couldn't afford to have it turned on.
Was that Eastern Oregon Electric in those days?
Yeah, Eastern Oregon Electric. They had the powerhouse up there on Morgan Lake Road, going up the hill.
Mill Canyon.
Mm-hmm. Mill Canyon. And later we moved down on 611C, right next to Jess Turnbull. The house is still there. They've built on, it's right on the creek. We moved in there. That's where our daughter was born. When Virginia was born, we lived there. We lived there for quite a while. We lived different spots. It didn't have lights or water.
First time I got acquainted with you, you were living down on H, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I lived down on H.
You and Mitch came in, and you'd gotten the old garage at the Catholic Church. You were going to move it down on H.
Yeah, it's down there yet. It's still there, and it looks like they built onto it and made a house, kind of an apartment out of it. Father McMahon gave me that garage, and we got that old truck, and went down and got a permit and hauled that thing with
I sold you the permit when I went to the Clear Treasures office.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I remember Bill. Yeah.
And that thing is still sitting down there. I don't know how we ever did that. I still don't know how we did that. Because we backed the truck. We borrowed the truck from somebody. Oh, Mike Lynch. We got it from Mike Lynch. And we backed the truck inside the garage. Just a nose sticking out, and then we jacked the garage up and we put some beams across the flatbed truck and then left the garage back down on the beams. We only had about 4 inches of clearance going down the street. But just Mitch is out front guiding me, and I'm driving that thing, couldn't see nothing. All that clear down there on G or H.
A lot of people don't realize how many houses in LeGrand were moved in those days.
Yeah.
Oh, that Mr. Lovely, he was one of the movers.
Yeah, he was a mover.
And then there's another one lived down there on the second side.
I don't know whether Hildebrandt was or not, but he moved houses. He was he done house cement work and sidewalks and done some house construction. some.
You still see his name on the sidewalks
if
you walk up 4th Street. Mm-hmm. That's when they were proud enough to put their name in there in the year that they...
Yeah, them sidewalks are still here.
Yeah.
But they mixed that cement out of the river gravel, you know. That's what, in the administration building over at the college, all that gravel came from the river. They hauled it up there in wagons and had a big mixer up there and mixed it up. And that's the hardest concrete in this town, I do believe, because I've tried to drill holes in that building a lot of times, and that is really hard stuff. It and Ackerman. They're really, really...
How long after the college was built did they build Ackerman?
They built Ackerman in 35. And the college, the other building, I think it was 29. And long about that same time, they built the Secretary Hotel.
Yeah. Well, it was about 27, I was told.
Yeah.
Because it was before the Depression.
Yeah.
And then the Le Grand Hotel was built about that time also.
Yeah, Le Grand Hotel up there. And it didn't last. They only about 3 or 4 years, they tore it back down again.
What do you remember about the Chinese?
Oh, when I first came here, I'd never seen a Chinaman before. And I was scared to death of them. I'd seen lots of Mexicans and Gypsies, but not Chinamen. And there was a lot of Chinese down there in Chinatown. And there below where the old Safeway store is now.
Yeah.
I went down there in Jefferson.
That'd be 4th and Jefferson.
Yeah, down through there. That was Chinatown down there. And there was quite a few Chinese here that had restaurants. There was quite a few Chinese restaurants around. But I was always scared of them. I didn't trust them. I was always afraid they were going to stab me with a knife or something.
Remember the old Chinaman that used to go down the alleys down...
Yeah, and then when I lived in Old Town, we had a Chinaman that had a garden up there that he sold produce.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember what was in it. Charlie, I think you're right. And there was quite a few Chinese and blacks. There was a few blacks here too.
But mostly they were on the north side.
Yeah,
they?
Yeah. Except the Chinese were down here.
Right.
And they Chinese once in a while get into a battle, what they call them, Tong Wars.
Uh-huh.
They get into different tongs, they say. They get into fighting and have the little battles down there. But I was always scared of it. I remember us kids used to roam up down the alleys. I don't know what we were doing down there, running up down the alley looking for whiskey. Well, we'd find a whiskey bottle. We could sell them for 10 cents.
Uh-huh.
And of course, that days away. Whiskey, it was all bootleggers.
Yeah.
And we'd go up and down the alleys looking for whiskey bottles and we'd get 10 cents a piece out of them. And there was about where the telephone company is, down there on Adams, well over down that alley, there was a toilet or a hall that went into a restaurant. But there was a toilet back there right next to the alley. And those kids would always go in that toilet and hide from the Chinese and we'd sell milk bottles and whiskey bottles. And I remember one time there was a fellow that would buy our whiskey bottles. He lived in the Foley Hotel. And us kids went clanking up through there one day with a big bag of whiskey bottles going through the lobby, and he said, "Don't ever do that again."
Did you know any particular thing about the bootleggers?
Us kids in Old Town, we were into a lot of stuff. But I remember that the Harrisons they were bootleggers. Sam Harrison lived up on Sea Avenue. He was a bootlegger. And we knew he had a still somewhere. And he was making whiskey, you know. And there was us older kids there in Old Town. We were in our 16, 17, 18 years old. And we couldn't figure out where he had that still, so we got to watch him. Well, we trailed him one night, and he went up on the south hill above the reservoir up here. He went up in there, and we followed him up there. And he had a still up there at a spring. There was a spring up there. And that's where he was making his whiskey. Well, when he left, we went in there and run a batch of whiskey off through his still, and we had a 10-gallon keg, and we brought the keg down to town, all us kids. And every kid in Old Town was drunk for a month. Then we went and stole his still from him, went up and took the still with us. And he had an idea who did it, but he couldn't do nothing about it because it was against the law. And we talked to one of the kids, his name was Harry Mason. So go up to Sam and tell him we'd trade him his still back for a gallon of whiskey. And so Harry did, and Sam says, I ought to shoot you, but I'll give you a gallon of whiskey for my still. So he got his still back, and we got another gallon of whiskey. But the whiskey that we run off through that still would make anybody sick. It was rot. And there were John Rothwell and Earl Woods and myself and all the kids up there in Old Town. That was one of our experiences. That was Earl Woods. Yeah, we couldn't find Earl for about a day. You know, when there was a old woodshed up there in Old Town on T Avenue. And I think what was her name that lived there? I can't think of their names.
They went to school.
Yeah. They lived there, and we couldn't find Earl for about a day. And we finally located him. He was in that woodshed. He had drank a whole bunch of that whiskey and got sick, and he passed out in that woodshed. We finally found him after about a day. That was one of our experiences. And old Sam Harrison was ready to shoot the whole bunch of us. Still, they still. That bunch in Old Town was quite a bunch of guys. I remember one night, we used to pull up the darnest thing. There was a house, an empty house. It was about a two-room house. It had an attic. And it was on there on B Avenue between 2nd and 1st. Sat right on the alley there. And it had been empty for years and years. We thought it was haunted, you know. So we'd go by there. So we thought, well, we'll pull one over. This Earl Woods, we called him Pud. We thought we'd pull something on him, so it was at night. We got him down there, and we told him, it says, inside that house you go up in the attic, there's a bunch of whiskey stashed up there. Some guy stashed some whiskey up there. And we had a ladder there, an old wood ladder. We stuck in there, and one of the guys got up in the attic. And when old Earl put his head up through that whole scuttle hole going into the attic, this guy grabbed him around the neck. It was dark. Earl went out there, and I'm telling you, he was making tracks when he left there. Grabbed him around the neck. I scared him to death. By golly, Earl, you know, he whacked his thumb off, too, with a axe. One of my buddies.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Earl, when they lit, we had a lot of fun. But we sure scared Earl to death. He was scared of the dark anyway, and that's the reason we did it.
That was about what year? What?
Oh, that was probably about 1933, 32, 33.
When did Prohibition go off?
I think 33.
33.
Yeah. They brought in what they call the beer they brought in. I think it was called 3.2 or something. Alcoholic content. It was rotten stuff. They brought that in about then when they opened it up. But there was a few bootleggers around. could get a bottle of bootleg any, most any time she had
Pearly
the money.
Styles?
Yeah.
Pearly Styles is one of them?
Yeah, Styles. Styles and Harrison's. And then down at the old Star Theater when I was a young kid, we got the bright idea we didn't have money to go to show. So we'd crawl up a telephone pole in the alley, and then we'd go down the roof, and they had scuttle holes up there on the roof, you know. And we'd open up scuttle hole and get in the attic. Then they had these here, oh, they kind of built down like from the ceiling. They'd build these deals down that had for, I don't know what they were for. They just built the deal down slow. And we'd lay in the attic, we'd cut holes through them, through the wood with our pocket knife, and we'd lay up there and watch the movies. Of course, there wasn't no sound, it was all silent movies.
Uh-huh.
And so we'd lay up there and watch the movies till somebody got to throw, one of the kids got to throwing stuff down on the people, and that's the end of that. They caught us up there. Here come the police.
Is that when Clint Haynes was the chief
Yeah,
police?
Clint Haynes and another guy named Cooper, Claude Cooper.
Well, Cooper went on to work for Warner Brothers Studio down there, and he was close to Dallas McKenna.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that.
Cooper's wife was a niece or something of Mrs. George Burney.
Oh. Well, I remember he rode a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And he had a sidecar.
City police.
Yeah. City police. And Clint Haynes was the chief. In fact, before they built the college, we used to play over on the hill. The police had an old Model T Ford red pickup with no top on it. It was just a Model T Ford, and that was the police car. Yes. A lot of things have changed.
They were hard times, but
we had a lot of fun.
We
made our own fun, a lot of it, because we didn't have any money, neither did your parents. You know, you didn't go and ask your dad for a dime, because he didn't get it anyway, because
the
dime was a dime. And to get in the show, we'd just sneak in or any way we could get in there. There was a fellow that took tickets. They used to have a ticket taker at the Arcade Theater. It was a pretty fancy theater. They had a ticket taker, and he had a uniform on, and he took tickets at the door. Well, if you had a nickel, if you slip a nickel to him, he'd let you in. Because if you didn't have a dime, if you had a nickel, he'd let you go in. He made more money than I think the theater did. We had all the ins and outs on all the things to do. We'll go up the alley behind the Blue Mountain Creamery, and we'd pick a milk bottle or two up off the back deck, and we'd go around the front door and sell them for a nickel. Sell them the same bottles back. We had all kinds of things.
That's when Mr. Tyler had Blue Mountain Creamery.
Huh?
When Mr. Tyler had Blue Mountain Creamery.
Yeah, he had the Blue Mountain Creamery. Mr. Tyler, Frank Tyler. In fact, when we lived up on Cedar Street, he lived right in front of us on First Cedar. We are First and K, and we lived on Cedar and K. Well, we lived there. We had a barn out back there too. The same guy that got his thumb shot off. Well, him and my brother was messing around out there in the barn, and Dad called us in for supper, so we come in for supper, and this kid stayed out in the barn, and very soon we heard a big explosion. Well, what he'd been doing, him and my brother had been making a cannon out of a piece of pipe and black powder, and he'd been out there dinging around with that, and it blew up, and it blew three fingers off his hand, and a big piece of metal went up into his arm. Well, he's the same guy that later on got his the other thumb shot off with a .22. Same He was getting pretty fingerless.
Is that an apple
or an arnold? What? Is that an apple? Yeah, apple Oliver. I run around with his brother, younger brother, Arnold Oliver.
You mentioned the city dump being down on the river.
Yeah.
I got a call from the city a while back, and they wanted to know what happened. Did they bury the stuff down there? Well, what happened when the water come up in the spring, it washed most of it down the river.
Yeah.
They didn't.
Down a swimming hole was right below it. Then we used to swim at Ordell, too. There was under the old bridge went across there, and we used to swim down in there. Yeah. Right below that rock slide.
Uh-huh.
We used to come down that in a tub.
Yeah.
We'd come banging down through there with that rock slide with an old galvanized tub.
We'd
try that. We'd done that.
Well, was that about the time that boy got killed up there on Devil's Slide?
Yeah. I think so. I think it was before that. Then there was another kid. Then they built the swimming pool there, Crystal Plunge, there for the viaduct.
Right.
There was a kid got killed in there and electrocuted.
Yeah.
Can't remember his name. And so they shut that down. They done away with that pool. It didn't last too many years. I remember we used to go down there swimming, but the water was real cold. We didn't like it. We'd rather swim in the river. Then we had another swimming pool at Perry, where the weigh station is. Pinecone.
Yeah,
Pinecone.
And that came right out of the river.
Yeah, that's right out of the river, too. And Cove, we had that in Norwich Cove.
That was 15 miles away.
Yeah, and that was quite a hike over there, hitchhiking or riding our bicycles or something to get over there. Swim all day and then try to walk home at night and hitchhike a ride and get hungry and
warm water made you tired.
Yeah, that warm water make you take all the wood stuff out of you, you know. But we had a lot of things to do. Didn't have any money, so we had to do something, and we thought it wasn't for the good of the country.
Kids have a way of finding trouble.
Yeah, right.
Well, did you ever fish in Catherine Creek in the days when the salmon come up?
My dad did. I didn't, but I remember my dad used to go over there and fish for salmon.
Uh-huh.
And then he also, I think I've got a picture of him somewhere around here. When we first came from Kansas, he went fishing on Indian Creek.
Uh-huh.
Got a great big salmon up there. He's got a picture. I got a picture of him with that. And boy, that was something, you know. In Kansas, you didn't have that kind of fishing. All you had was perch.